Best time of the week when I get to fight, and we're going to do it for a long time today. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to fight with Scott Reed because it's overhyped versus underplayed.
Overhyped.
Create jobs and opportunity.
In this election,
here's what I want to do.
Or underplayed.
And in the overhyped column again, Scott Reed, CTV News political commentator and former communications director for Prime Minister Harper. In the underplayed corner.
Not Harper.
Oh,
for Prime
geez.
Minister Paul Martin. That's a substantial mistake, okay? I have to correct that. You're in broadcasting, right? You follow these things?
No, I wasn't sure whether, because you were in politics, whether the facts matter. But they do.
Right.
That's good. Well, that's a good correction.
Well, given all that I did for Prime Minister Martin, Harper actually did think I was his communications director. So.
Ah, very good. That was a nice. Well, you're right. You were for Prime Minister Paul Martin. How are you, my friend? How was the week? How's everything going before we get to it? I just want, you know, the family's good. You're shaved. You're healthy. Everything's good.
I am. I was just telling folks before we got on, I am going to watch the Habs game this evening.
Yeah,
and then I will sleep for 4 hours. And then I'm loading an 8-year-old, a 12-year-old into an SUV and driving 16 hours to Thunder Bay straight.
Why are you going
That's
to the
gonna
big...
That's going to be the end of my week.
Why are you going to the Big T? What's going on there?
Yeah, it's a long story. They go up there. They visit family. They go from Thunder Bay to Trident, all that sort of stuff. So I'll take them up there, leave the vehicle. I fly back a couple days later. But 16 hours.
Wow.
16 hours.
Yeah, it's a hell of a drive. I've done that drive, and it's a hell of a drive. But the north side of – see, as you go up the Trans-Canon, you go up past Kapuskasing and Hearst as you get to the top, and then there's lots of beautiful north shore of Superior stuff. Boy, that's a nice drive, though. It's a long one, but it's nice.
It's gorgeous. You come across the lakehead there, as they say, but, you know, also the waters get, you know, twinkling, and you have to keep your focus. Suddenly looking at all that water, like refracting, you know, the light refracting off the water, and you start thinking to yourself, like, oh, gee, you know, it's really cool that I have wings and I can fly over this lake. And
yeah.
I'm driving off the road. So,
yeah, don't do that. And then you got the paddle to the sea stuff, and then you could get right down into Manitoba there. Wow, that's a heck of a drive. Okay, so that's great. So you watch the Habs game, and then you're on the road trip. What is your, before we get to overhyped and underplayed, I was saying I saw my folks this week. I took Monday off to see my dad and mom. And I was in the car. What is your go-to road song? I mean, there's a lot. 16 hours, you're going to go through a lot. I know you go through podcasts, sports, comedy. But is there a song when you get out on the road after this damn pandemic? Do you have a road trip song? Like, there's a couple songs that I love on the road that I love, but do you have something that you puts you on and you're like, this is fantastic?
Two of them. It's funny you should ask this. People won't believe it. We'll think this is a bit that was set up, but in all honesty, I have an explicit answer to that question. One, and it's better impact with my older boys because it's become a running gag with them now, my 18 and 22 year old. Always like to get onto the road whenever I'm going to the cottage with the older boys, the minute we're in, and then they start screaming, no, Dad, don't. I put on Teddy Bear by Red Sovine, and I laugh, and I laugh.
Really? Okay.
Schmaltzy. It's great stuff, right? Come on, truckers. Come on back and talk to Teddy Bear. I just love it. It's nothing. It makes me laugh. It gives me great joy.
Was unexpected. By the way, that was unexpected, but okay.
Oh, yeah, man. That's great, right? A word of thanks from Mama Teddy Bear. Oh, you made my little boy's dreams come true. And then for real, because that's kind of a joke one, but like at some point on the trip tomorrow, I will play Lake Marie by John Prine at least 3 times. And I will play the studio version. I will play my particular favorite live version, Sausages. And they was sizzling. I will play a lot of John Prine tomorrow, but particularly Lake Marie.
Now, I do love John Prine, too much John Prine can make a 16-hour trip seem a little longer. I mean, I thought you were going to be like, you know, Steely Dan, Can't Buy a Thrill, Do It Again, or, the extended version of Cortez the Killer by Neil Young, or Sam Roberts, you know, Them Kids, like some kind of rock and roll. But no, you're right into the John Prine, and okay. There you go. Let's get to it. Overhyped versus underplayed. Right. Leadership of Green Party leader Annamie Paul. For now, it's safe. It's in serious jeopardy. She survived a vote last night that might have led to a confidence motion. She's got an ultimatum. She's got to essentially throw her former senior advisor under the bus, and she probably should because he came out and made accusations against two of the former MPs, one of them who then later defected to the Liberals. Is the trouble for Annamie Paul overhyped or underplayed?
Underplayed. I mean, it's getting a lot of attention, and it's getting a lot of hype, but it's still underplayed. Her position, you say, well, she survived last night. It looks like her leadership's intact for now. No, it's not. Her team, her executive council, puts out a public statement saying that unless she publicly executes one of her advisors, she is going to face a non-confidence vote. Like, you can't operate with that gun to your head if you're a leader. No leader can be the leader. No leader can pretend to be leading. No leader can be seen to be the leader if they're taking that kind of dictate from their own team. Obviously, this party is busted. This party is broke. She doesn't enjoy their confidence. So she's either got to meet them in the main square and wrestle them to the ground, or she's got to quit. That ultimatum should be responded to by saying, sorry, no can do. I will not take orders from you guys. I'm the leader. I'm elected by the membership. I will be giving the orders. And if you don't like it, then bring it on. And if she doesn't have the numbers to survive that vote, then she should quit. But she can't operate under this kind of direction. And I think it's underplayed because I believe we're 2 months from an election. I believe that Annamie Paul has some game. And I believe that she represents a substantial threat, therefore, both the NDP and potentially the Liberals, just in terms of siphoning votes off, maybe making a balance in some ridings, harming the leaders, particularly the Prime Minister, in a debate. And I think all of that's being undermined. This is a huge win for Justin Trudeau.
I wonder if that is old school politics, if the Green Party operates differently. She made a mistake, Annamie Paul. This is the mistake she made as a rookie leader, not realizing that when your senior advisor turns on most of your caucus and accuses them of being anti-Semitic and discriminatory and threatens to run candidates against them, she immediately has to choose which side she's on. She must stand with her MPs, especially because she doesn't have a seat. She should have tossed him out immediately and reasserted control. She didn't. And now they're saying, you got to do that. Now she looks weak, I agree with you, by following that, but she had to do it anyway, and she should do it. What do you think?
I agree with that. She should have sacked him immediately. She should have said, we can't have this. I can't have an advisor pointing the finger of blame in that way, in that forceful
kind of fashion. She had to sack him right away.
She had to sack him right away. The fact that she didn't sack him right away meant that she has to live with the consequences. And now she's in a situation where if she complies with that order, she's complying with an order, and she can't permit that. This party is broken right now.
What did you make when she said that the Liberals are so desperate they'll attack her, and then she said they'll attack the first Black and Jewish leader of a federal party, that she brought in both the religious and the race issue to this floor crossing?
I think it's a measure of how under fire she feels. I think she feels that defensive. So she's playing the cards that are available to her. So, you know, we can all say, my God, you know, that's out of bounds. Nobody even raised those things, you know. But she's probably feeling very injured right now, very defensive, very hurt. And, you know, the way I read it is less strategic and more as a study in where her head is at right now, which is she's in the bunker, man. Like, her own party is doing everything it can around the clock to cut her knees out from under her.
I got a note from Annamie Paul. I wrote her last night. She said, I survived the vote. She said, I'm still in the fight. So we'll see. All right, Scott Reed, stay with us. Overhyped and Underplayed continues after this short break. We're going to find out what a Catholic pastor did throwing shoes off the steps. And we'll talk about the lottery. Scott Reed's fantasies. Next. It's time for Overhyped and Underplayed Part 2.
Overhyped. Create jobs and opportunity.
In this election,
here's what I want to do.
Or underplayed.
God, not enough Scott Reed. He's back for round 2. So much to discuss. A pastor at a church, Catholic church, saw that there were shoes left on the steps. And the shoes, of course, were kids' shoes, part of the national protest against the about the residential institutions where the remains of 215 children were found in unmarked graves. And there's probably thousands more across the country at the 139 other official residential institutions. The pastor said, and they were laid, these shoes, by someone whose relatives were in the residential system. And he threw them out. He said they were dirty and gross and didn't really realize it was a protest, which is, of course, a joke because he was well aware that these were happening across the country. Overhyped or underplayed that a pastor threw out shoes left on his Catholic church's steps to honor the lost children of the residential institutions?
Well, it's outrageous. And I'd like to, you know, frankly, switch from shoes to boots and deliver one straight to his ass. But I'm going to say overhyped for a very specific reason. I think this kind of story is dangerous, as outrageous and awful as it is. It's dangerously close to outrage porn. And so we can all pass this around and people can talk about how terrible it is and how insensitive that guy is. And then people feel like, now I've committed my moral act of good for the day. And I don't think it's a sufficient act to just be outraged about this guy. I think that we should be on top of the Catholic Church, which, because of the way in which it's federated and because of the way in which it's corporatized into entities, has not paid its share of recompense for residential schools. It did everything it could to avoid issuing an apology, everything it could to avoid paying monies owed. And I don't want to just be outraged at one goofball pastor who makes headlines. I want people to train their anger more fundamentally on the church itself, and it should be shamed and harried and harassed into doing the right thing, admitting its complicity and paying up.
Yeah, it's well said. I think this was emblematic of the denialism. I spoke to the Ontario Regional Chief of the National Assembly of First Nations, Chief Archibald, yesterday, and she told me straight up, I said, have the Catholic Church and the government given all the records? Because they've got $10 million from the Ontario government to look for more unmarked graves and investigate them. She said, no, there's not enough money and there's not enough records, and the church hasn't admitted it. They haven't apologized, and the Pope, she means, but they also haven't given up the records. And she was furious. And this callous act of this one pastor is emblematic of that. So I'm not going to dwell on, but I thought you said that very well. You heard that story quickly about the TikTok? You saw that story that we did, that there are young people living in TikTok mansions and making more money than you and I put together. So what's the story? Would you let your kids go into a TikTok mansion and make content if they said, Dad, I can make more money than you?
No.
I'm not going to university. I'm making $500,000 a year as a TikTok influencer. Dad, smart guy.
No, I would chain them to the house, and I would make them look at old Polaroids of what I did for a living when I was a kid and how I laid drywall, you know, for $9 an hour, and it built character and taught me the value of hard work. I just think this is the absolute decay of society. These people are influencers. Why would I care what they wear, how their hair looks, what belt they're wearing? It just,
are you that dad, though? But, I mean, I dismiss Kim Kardashian. She's a billionaire. What are we missing with this new economy?
I'm full-on old man. This teaches people to be bad people. This is garbage people. I'm an influencer. Look at the cushions that I'm sitting next to. I've never done anything in my entire life other than fix my hair. Men and women alike, it is a decay of our moral fortitude. It's bad. I don't like it.
I have a slightly more charitable, but I'm probably as crusty as you. Here's what I don't like. The weaponization and monetization of envy. And envy is a sin. And that's what you do. My life's not as good as your life. And they do these things, and it is weapons of mass distraction. There's an emptiness, and they're paid to weaponize envy. And that bothers me. And they create envy everywhere. And that I don't like. The product is envy, and I don't love envy.
What fills me with envy is that I had, you know, talking with 50, That was my TikTok house where I would do dance routines, talk about what it's like to be in my 50s, and I didn't. I made minus $7. So I that you know this TikTok thing is too exclusive, yeah. Just for the young.
Let me just tell you, the thought of you dancing on TikTok isn't just going to not earn you money. It's just made me throw up in my mouth. So don't do that anymore.
I can bust moves, man.
No, you cannot. Oh, stop.
Oh yeah. Oh no.
You can't. You don't no even dance. If I dance in front of my kids walk out of the room. At least I know my limits. No.
Unreal.
Scott Reed, you cannot move to music.
No.
You should
it
not.
Makes people melt. No.
It makes people melt like No, like looking in the Ark in Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is 40 years old. You feel you'll melt like the No, you're not beautiful. You are a beautiful person, but you are not a beautiful dancer. Do not do that. Thank God this is radio. Because you know what? I bet you're moving around now trying to show off your... No, thank God this is radio.
I am. I'm no. for my bookcases. And
dude, God.
They are.
Thank God this is radio. God, if this was television, I would pull it up. All right, last question. The Lotto Max Lottery is $70 million right now. Reed's fantasy, if you had $70 million, do you quit? Do you quit the job and do something crazy? Or what do you do with $70 million, Scott Reed?
So I got two priorities. Three. I'll give some to my kids, notwithstanding everything I said before. I'd like,
yeah,
to, like
I'll buy them a TikTok mansion. That's what I'll do.
That's right. I'll buy them a TikTok mansion. So I want to make sure they're covered for that. Second, I'm going to pay local, conservation officials to look the other way in terms of, you know, regulations and all that stuff. And I'm going to rebuild the cottage to a massive palace that I love, and I can stay there forever and eventually get around to, like, you know, writing something that I could be proud of and would get published. And then the final thing is I have one enemy. I have one genuine enemy, and I would see what I could do with those
who
resources
is your enemy?
To make that enemy feel enormous pain.
Okay, who
so
is
I
your
would,
enemy?
I would dedicate a lot of energy toward that.
Who? This is the vendetta. Who is your
I'm
enemy?
I'm not going to say. I'm not going to broadcast it. I'm not going to.
You actually have an enemy, though?
I have one enemy. I have.
You actually have an enemy.
I have a person I hate. I don't throw that word around.
Actually,
one person
is that,
for whom I have
you know, it's
hate.
Funny. I was asked this weekend, do you have enemies? I said, look, you know, I'm the nature of my job, partisans always, you know, say nasty things. I don't know if I have an enemy. You have an enemy. Actually someone who's seeking to destroy you?
Yep. Yep, I have an enemy. I have a Lex Luthor, and I am determined. I'm determined to put them in the phantom zone.
Okay,
I would
so
use
what,
my
I got,
$70 million resources for that.
That is a surprising turn of events. I'm not surprised. I mean, knowing you as for as many years as I have, this doesn't, I must confess, totally surprise me. But I didn't expect you to devote the resources to this. Scott Reed, Overhyped and Underplayed. Everyone, text me if you have an enemy at 71010. That could be a good show.